Hi.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everything is fine. Hey, everybody. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Relax. Everything is just
fine. 215. I am Kyle Pagan, as always, joined by my man, Mark Henry. Before we get to today's episode, I want to talk to you about a new sponsor we have, Tap Room. Tap Room is a service that can deliver you beer. Better than GoPuff, better than Drizzly. Wherever you get your beer right now, I promise you it's better just because you can find hard-to-find beers, hard-to-find seltzers, hard-to-find spiked kombucha. That's a thing. I also know people from outside of Philadelphia, outside of Pennsylvania, listen to this podcast. You want some Yards beer? You want some Yingling down there? I think you can get that down there now in Florida and whatnot. Mark, you don't drink beer, but if you could, what would you get from Tap Room?
I've never had kombucha in my life. I have a couple podcasts that advertise kombucha. I have no idea what kombucha is. I'll try some spiked kombucha.
I don't think you'd like it.
No, okay.
That's probably I don't like fair. Kombucha. It tastes like feet. It tastes like fruited feet.
It's a hell of an advertisement.
It smells like feet too. But that's Tap Room. And you can get $50 off your first order of $100 or more with code FINE50, P-H-I-N-E 50. It's a no-brainer if you're having people over. You, your buddies, 10 people, 20 people come over. You get 3 cases, 4 cases, whatever, $50 off. It's a no-brainer. So football Sunday, Saturday, football, college football, Birds, Flyers, Sixers, we're in the heat of it. I have a solution for the Ben Simmons drama.
What is it?
Deportation.
Australia?
He's a dual citizen, so we have to kind of
Wimbledon
think about it more. But I feel like deportation would really help out with this whole situation with Ben Simmons.
So where's his girlfriend from? Is his girlfriend from the UK?
Maya Jama? Shishkum Bama? Come on now, mama. She's from England.
Yeah, he might get extradited to England from Australia if we deport him there. No, I had a friend who had a pretty good thought on the whole Ben Simmons situation and, you know, whether or not they want to trade him now or whether they want to wait. I thought it was interesting. I hadn't really thought about it before. So he basically was like, for the whole off season and summer, I've been looking at it like, what can we trade Ben Simmons for? Like, given how good Ben Simmons is at what he does, you can't trade him for less than a certain amount. He's basically saying that there's so much to talk yourself into with this current team that instead of looking at it as what are we trading Ben for and is that worth it trading Ben for him, it's what are we adding to this current team. And that might be a good way to look at it. It might be a little less of a pessimistic way to look at it. But I still think the best thing to do is maybe deport him, send him away. You know, get out of here, get out of our hair.
People have been denaturalized before. They have.
What's that
mean? It means you're a U.S. citizen and they're like, no, you're not a U.S. citizen anymore. It's a lot of like Nazi war criminals. So we're kind of fighting. Yeah, we're fighting an uphill battle.
I don't think the players union would be a big fan.
I don't know how far we are from Doc Rivers or Daryl Morey bringing war crimes against Ben Simmons. I think I think the city of Philadelphia is ready to bring war crimes against Ben Simmons. But what were you saying?
I mean, well, that's the muck. If that is part of the muck, the mud, or the barbed wire, I don't know which part.
Gotta get to the barbed wire.
That's part of it, but
we're mucking it up.
Yeah, I do think that, you know, the best thing to do is do what you're currently doing. I mean, they did give Embiid a rest the other day. Now we're without Tobias for a little bit. Let the young guns kind of show what they have. Let the role players kind of play into bigger roles and see who the most important pieces on our team are going to be around Embiid, Tobias, and whatever we get back from Ben at some point. I have heard there's been some reports and rumors that the Sixers are – well, obviously the Ramona Shelbourne thing, but even a couple days before that I had heard – that they're getting a little frustrated and that was kind of leaking out that they weren't working. He wasn't working with the Sixers like people thought he was at that time. And obviously Shelbourne and Woj kind of confirmed that. So there was some buzz when Portland was in town that, you know, they were talking with Portland about an acceptable deal, maybe with CJ Simons and picks or something like that.
You've beaten me down and you've beaten me down from the Dame, from the Bradley Beal. And you've talked me into CJ and I watched CJ the other day for the first time in a while. And I would take CJ at this point. CJ picks and Simons. I'm not going to talk to you like I know who this Simons guy is. off the top of my head. Back it up a little bit. I do want to explain, in case no one has seen it, the Ramona Shelburne article. We'll give you the cliff notes on it. So basically, Ben refuses to get help from 76ers doctors on his mental readiness. And that's where kind of people read and they stop. He's still getting resources from the NBA Players Association and supposedly has been doing it since the summertime. Now, the 76ers are getting impatient because he won't share timeline or details. He's been in Camden working out one-on-one drills, but not doing team activities, kind of like, you know, when Doc threw him out of the practice. That was probably the last time he actually was participating in team activities. Now, I'm not annoyed at the fact that he won't meet with 76ers doctors. I think if you take a sabbatical from your company, you should be able to pick whatever doctors you want that are covered under your insurance. I mean, you shouldn't have, you know, your company shouldn't be providing you doctors. But during your time off, you can't just have the right to choose what information you're going to give your company. You're still a commodity to them. They still pay your salary. You know, you're kind of a zero sum loss at the moment. Now, if Ben Simmons was to break his hand or break his foot, and he went and looked at, got a second opinion from independent doctors, and he wanted independent doctors to work on him, he still has to report those findings. He still has to report, you know, what his timeline is, what the cause of the injury, everything else. It's in his contract that he has to report that back to the team. So that's where it kind of annoys me with this whole situation, that like, we don't need a minute by minute case of what you're talking about with your therapist or your doctors. We just need like, hey man, you know, we're in the thick of the season right now. We're paying you $30 million. We're kind of going to need a timeline or maybe even a visualization of when you're coming back. And I understand the frustration with the Sixers, even though I don't think he has to, you know, necessarily meet with their doctors, as long as he's helping himself get mentally prepared. Now, I think this kind of tells you, you know, this was always the last bullet in the chamber for Clutch. You know, I don't want to be a dickhead when it comes to mental health and everything. You know, the Lane Johnson thing, the Calvin Ridley stuff, like that, I believe is real. And I hate to put things on a pedestal where it's like, this one's real, but this one seems kind of fake. It's kind of like, this COVID-19 vaccine is real, but Aaron Rodgers' COVID-19 vaccine is fake. We can get into that later if you want to. The thing is, like, I comes to the realization that, like, if he was to be traded right now, he'd be playing. I don't think he would be mentally unprepared to play. And the fact that this was the 10th card that Clutch played kind of annoys me there. So, Mark, I want to ask you, do we ever see Ben Simmons in a 76ers jersey ever again?
Honestly, at this point, I'm like done making predictions. Like, okay. I don't know what's going to happen, but this is why I wanted him to stay away. This is like, I didn't.
You're right. I've always been on that boat.
I didn't want him to come here and then be like, is he faking it? Is he mentally ready? Like, it's just like, I had no interest in any of it. Let's just do what we're doing on the court anyway and have him stay home, have people buy into the idea of him instead of having him completely tank his value day after day after day in the media and whatever. It's incredibly frustrating that we strong-armed him to come back and that he obviously came back because he wanted to get paid. I wish everything didn't go the way it did. But I completely agree with you. Like, I don't want to get canceled. I don't want you to get canceled. I don't want everything's fine to get canceled.
Gotta stop worrying about being canceled, okay? No, I'm in conviction.
I'm in constant cancel fear.
Stop it.
It clearly doesn't dictate anything I say on here, because I say about like one cancelable thing a podcast. But I'm right with you that this is obviously, you know, it's hard to buy into. It's hard to give Ben the benefit of the doubt after every report just seemed like he was doing whatever he could to get out of Philly. So I clearly think this was just another page in the playbook. Like, I think that this was yet another attempt to get him out. And it was probably the most successful attempt because he's getting paid right now. So that's at least like, I guess they did a good enough job to get him paid. So that's a start of something. But yeah, it's hard for me to be like, oh, I really hope he comes back, or I think he will, or I think he won't. Because at this point, Daryl has shown he's comfortable being uncomfortable. And I appreciate that. And, you know, going back to what I said about the rumors with Portland and whether or not they should trade for CJ. It's actually funny. I think everyone, including you and the Philly fans, are like kind of getting to where I was over the summer, where it's like, oh, okay, maybe we could trade for CJ and maybe that'll be fine. And I'm actually, weirdly enough, I'm kind of being like, you know what, let's wait a little bit. Like, let's wait it out. Like, I my opinion of it is just that, like, I don't see a scenario outside of injury that offer's not on the table in January or February. So let's give it a little bit of time. Let's see if Dame continues to play like trash and if Portland continues to lose to teams that are without 4/5 of their starting lineup. De'Aaron Fox playing terrible basketball right now in Sacramento. I don't even know if I want him, but maybe he becomes available. Maybe Daryl looks at that as just like something you can't pass up on. And the Kings do have other guards that are playing well. So Fox might be very available in a couple months or weeks or whatever that is. But I just think that there's so many shoes that could drop at any given time. We've seen it too many times in the NBA where players become, you know, available out of nowhere. I just don't want to invest today because we're uncomfortable in a CJ McCollum when I think that investment will be there in January or February with the potential of something better than that. So I just think you can't just do it because you're uncomfortable. You can't just do it because fans are upset. Like I had someone in, you know, I'll call them out, the Painted Lines group chat was saying like, seriously, how long is Daryl going to put up with this? Like, I can't handle this anymore. We need to get Ben out of here. And it's like, you read that and you read the reaction from a lot of Sixers Twitter and it's like, oh, we must be having a bad season, right? It's like, no, we're 5-2 with one of those losses being like an epic fourth quarter collapse to the best team in basketball, the Nets. So it is like, you know, let's maybe ease up after a 2-game winning streak in which we absolutely shit on the Atlanta Hawks. And then we beat the Portland Trailblazers, who have made the playoffs for 8 straight years. And we beat them without 4/5 of our starting lineup. So, you know, I just think that let's let this Sixers season play out. Let's see where we are in a couple weeks without Ben and kind of let's reevaluate. Let's see what's going on around the league at that point. And just real quick, because I spent all morning calling out on Twitter about it. So why not just throw it out there? A guy named Shane Trail, who works for Action Network, has 94 Twitter followers. I have more followers on their Action Network site that he works for than he does on Twitter. About triple the amount. So, you know, no reason to be paying me to write for Action Network, though. So anyway, this guy, Penn State grad, smart guy, he writes an article about betting on the Bulls today. By the way, I have the Sixers really hard tonight. I'm going to the game. I hope the Sixers win. So that's thanks obviously – I'm going with my girlfriend, but it's
– I can third wheel.
So I'm obviously biased tonight, but anyway, I mean, he took it at +1.5. The line jumped up to like 3.5. So real sharp guy there, Action Network. But anyway, he put in his article that the Sixers are 5-2, having only defeated the true bottom tier teams in the league. The Atlanta Hawks went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. Woj interviewed John Collins today, and the caption was Woj interviews John Collins, who is on the Atlanta Hawks, who are the fastest rising power in the Eastern Conference. And it's like, so I tweeted at Woj to let him know, like, Shane Trail does not think that the Hawks are a rising power. In fact, they are a bottom tier team. So, you know, so are the Portland Trailblazers, who have made 8 straight playoffs. So, you know, if you listen to him, the Sixers haven't beaten anybody. But if you use your eyes and your ears and your, you know, brain, you can see that they are coming off of maybe the two most impressive back-to-back wins in the last like 3 years for the Sixers.
You woke up today and you chose some violence. I enjoy it. I always like a good fired up mark. It's my favorite kind of mark.
I'm sick. So I get some anger going in me and, you know, bubbling up.
The only thing I have to counter on that is, what team does Clutch think is trading for Ben Simmons if he's not going to show first that he's mentally ready to play? Second, that he can play. New ball. We don't know how Ben Simmons is going to react to a new ball. He didn't shoot all fourth quarter. Last time we saw him, he passed the ball to Matisse Thybulle. That was the last thing we remember from Ben Simmons. We don't know if he can shoot from the free throw line. We don't know if he can make a 15-foot jumper. Spoiler alert, probably cannot still. But will not.
That's the difference.
There you go. But like with this whole Calvin Ridley and Lane Johnson stuff, like I wouldn't be surprised if GMs are starting to get scared off by guys that, you know, physical requirements. I think mental requirements in the combine and stuff are going to be just as as what? Come on, Mark, help me out. As important, thank you. As physical requirements will be coming up, and I don't think Calvin Ridley and Lane Johnson are the last ones this season. I don't at all, and that's perfectly fine, and that happens, and that just adds to a GM's job, and that's why they get paid millions and millions of dollars to make these kind of decisions and whatnot. But I just don't see what team looks at this whole situation and they're like, okay, I'm able to give up a star and first or a couple firsts for Ben before I see him on the floor. That's the only thing I'm kind of worried about. Hey, I'm buckled up, buddy. Don't come at me. All right. I got 17 buckles on right now. All right. I'm ready to go through the mud, the muck, the barbed wire for Daryl, for the Sixers. But I'm still worried about, what other teams are looking at.
So I do think that more people will, you're absolutely right in that Calvin Ridley and Lane Johnson are not the last of this kind of issue. And, guys like Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan really started this whole thing being, so open about it. And shout out to them. That's awesome that that people feel like they are able to do that. Now, exactly, we think this Ben Simmons situation is kind of abusing that. So obviously that's a little bit different. But going back to your point on what teams are going to trade for him, I have two answers to that. One would be Clutch has clearly shown a complete misunderstanding of how to rehab trade value from the very beginning of this anyway. So they're, how does Clutch think that a team's going to trade for him? How do they think anything they think? I don't think that a lot of their decisions are being made in a very, in a vacuum, in a very smart way. Like, I just think that they're kind of living by the seat of their pants, and Rich Paul is kind of making decisions that, he's laying.
They're not getting on a Zoom call and hey, this is our next play. They're kind of just like in a group chat.
I really am curious. Like, and I've brought this up before. I really am curious how involved LeBron is. And I really am curious if LeBron, I know that when people hear that, they're going to take that as me being as me saying that LeBron's very involved and this is all coming straight from LeBron. I think LeBron runs most things over at Clutch, like the important things. And when there's an issue, I think LeBron does the full court press. Is Odell with Clutch at all, or am I wrong?
I think he is.
Yeah, 'cause he obviously came out yesterday and defended Odell a bunch. So I think LeBron is very front facing with stuff like that about Clutch and tries to do his own things in the media to help out anyone with Clutch. I think this is a Rich Paul production. I don't think LeBron's involved. I think LeBron, we've talked about it before, that tweet he sent out about Ben Simmons, where I don't understand these people who work on things that they don't do in the game. I think LeBron has wiped his hands clean and cut ties with Ben. And he's like, I'm done with this bullshit. This guy's making me look bad. He's making Clutch look bad. He's making Rich Paul look bad. I'll let them handle it. Like, whatever. There was a report that the Lakers did all call us and ask about, if we wanted Russell Westbrook.
Did they really?
That's a rumor.
Did he hang up on him? My God.
Allegedly, yeah, that Daryl hung up on him. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So I guess that kind of flies in the face of my thought of if LeBron's involved or not. But I truly think that this is like maybe the first Rich Paul run production, because I think LeBron led that Anthony Davis situation. I think LeBron has handled some of these Clutch issues in the past differently than this Ben Simmons issue. So I think that says a lot. And number two, the other point I have on this, I've always said that the worst thing to Ben Simmons' trade value would be him getting back on the floor. I think the best thing for him to do is to just say, you saw him for 3 years. He's a three-time, like Daryl did on, I think Daryl did a perfect job on the interview with Missinelli. Yeah. So when he said, what do you have? I think Missinelli asked him, what do you have to say to the teams around the league about Ben Simmons' trade value and the reports about it being so low? He's like, well, a few coaches that voted him to be a three-time All-Star don't think he ever deserved it, then that's fine, I guess. But you clearly did think he deserved it then. So I think that's the best way to do it. You sell him as that three-time All-Star. You sell him as a 24-year-old or whatever. I think he's 25, 24, whatever he is. And you sell him as the idea of him. And the idea of him is going to be intriguing to a team that starts out very poor, starts out 7-15 in a couple of weeks and feels like they're lagging behind even the play-in race. So that is something that hurts us as well, though. These teams that are now in the past, there was only 8 playoff spots. Now there's technically 10 for you to get in to get a chance to play in. So less teams are going to completely cut bait early because they still think they have a chance to get in there. But I still think there will be teams in a couple of weeks that have to take a hard look in the mirror at what they are and think, am I going to keep my job after this year? Is this staff going to be around, like, for me to continue with this vision, or do you have to kind of shift the gears and do something drastic? And I think that there's a ton of GMs in the league that look at Ben Simmons as a distressed value asset that they can get for less than he is worth, and they can really turn around their franchise with it. And I don't think that it's any secret who the teams that have been really interested in Ben Simmons are. Three of the teams that have been very interested in Ben Simmons are Toronto, San Antonio, and Golden State. Those are three of the smartest GMs and three of the smartest organizations in basketball. Masai Ujiri is a genius. The Spurs and RC Buford, Greg Popovich, I would trust those guys in my life. And then the third team that I mentioned earlier, and then I'm forgetting, Golden State, who obviously it's the Golden State Warriors, Bob Myers, they know what they're doing. They drafted Stephen Clay and Dre and signed KD and did all this stuff. And I think that those are three teams that are that have showed continued interest in Ben Simmons. I think those are three of the smarter teams in the league. So I think that there's plenty of teams out there that will easily be able to talk themselves into the idea of Ben Simmons, even if they think that that is at 70 to 80 cents on the dollar.
I have a fourth team for you.
Oh, who is it?
All trouble in paradise right now. Boston Celtics.
I think you could make an argument.
Because interdivision, like, you know how, like, in baseball and football, like, oh, they'll never trade him to the division. I feel like divisions don't matter in NBA. It's more conference and stuff. So maybe, like, not interconference and whatnot. But, yeah, man, I mean, Marcus Smart coming out and just railing against Jalen and Jason. Yeah, it's kind of a trouble in paradise right there. 2-5, rookie coach, kind of wondering, like, what are these guys and whatnot? Split them up a little bit. Kind of like the Boston Celtics.
Rookie coach who worked with Ben Simmons, Ime Udoka, former assistant coach.
Rookie
the
GM, too.
That is true. Brad Stevens.
but the only guy to, like, not have any, like, championship success and get promoted.
How bizarre. Just like, I was watching a Celtics game the other night and they cut to Ime Udoka. I don't know how you say his first name, but I was straight up like, I forgot. Like, yeah,
I forgot too.
I completely forgot. That's not Brad Stevens anymore. Like, such a bizarre. Before we move on, just real quick, staying with the Celtics, the whole Brown Tatum thing. Like, I for years kind of said, like, you know, when you have a guy like Brown and a guy like Tatum, I get that they might not fit perfectly together, and you might want to get like a different. Like, they're both scoring guard. They're scoring wings. So I get the idea of you want a big man with one of them, or you want a point guard with one of them. You can distribute. And having just two empty-ish scorers who are both good at defense, I understand that there's a little overlap there. But I said for years, when you have two guys that are that young, you always have the opportunity to find either a guard or a big to put with them and kind of make the whole thing match. I don't know if that's happening in Boston anymore. Like, I do think there's an argument to be made that Tatum and Simmons, and maybe you get Maxey, maybe you get a couple other guys, that might be a better way to go than to continue trying this thing that clearly doesn't look like it's going to work for Boston. And I thought that I thought Boston was going to be a contender for years to come a couple of years ago. Even last year, when everyone was shitting on Boston and saying the era was over, I was kind of like, let's not pour dirt on them too fast. Like, they still have Brown and Tatum. I thought that they'd come back this year, be a 5 or a 6 seed, or maybe surprise some people and go above that. Doesn't seem like it. I do not like what I've seen out of Boston. So I think that they should consider that. They won't, though.
And it's a weird situation because Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum actually like each other. It's not like two ball dominant stars shooters that, like, just don't like each other. They're, like, actually friends.
I think that there's a little, I've heard there's some friction there. Jaylen Brown made a comment.
They had a sit down. Like 2 weeks before the season, you know, to really, like, clear the air and get brutally honest about their relationship.
Brown said something like, you know, we don't have to be best friends. That was all I heard, though. And so I was like, whoa, I didn't know that there was any trouble in paradise. So this, like, leak of, like, you know, we don't have to be best friends, but we have to be cordial. And it was like, I didn't know you weren't cordial. So, like, that
but
was
it's like Embiid and it's Embiid and
yeah, but Simmons, but right? that's kind of been, like, reported for years. Like, people have said that for years. So, like, the Brown and Tatum thing, like, I did, like you just said, like, I thought they were best friends. So, like, when I saw that report 2 months ago, whenever that was, I was like, what? Like, I didn't know that there was any issues there. So if they go 4-10, I don't think they'll be best friends anymore.
It's true. Winning only cures all. So I have this I want to talk to you about. What if the Sixers are good without Ben? Like, what's Clutch's next move there? Like, because, like you said, they're one challenge away from being 6-1. first in the East. They're number one in effective field goal percentage, number one in offensive rating, true shooting percentage, top five in 3-point percentage, top five in free throw percentage.
They're pretty high in defense too.
They're dead last in rebounding and pace, which is important. Pace is important.
Dead last in rebounding?
Dead last in rebounding. Yeah.
That's surprising.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that too. Yeah, they're getting crushed defensively, not offensively. Offensively, they're fine. Defensive rebounds are getting crushed on now. So what happens if like the Sixers are good? And I want to also throw this out there. Is this the deepest Sixers team since the 2011 Sixers that took the Celtics to game seven?
Deeper than we had Evan Turner and Elton Brand coming off.
They're deeper, but if you look back at these, you know, you always make fun of it. The 2019 team, Greg Monroe and Boban were our backup centers, and we had I forget who was our backup shooters, but like that team was it was the first five, maybe six, seven, and that was it, maybe seven. Like you had one guy coming off the bench, McConnell maybe. Like I don't even think McConnell saw burn in that playoff series. This is the deepest team in the last like 10 years.
For sure. I mean, this is the deepest Sixers team in my life. I'm willing to say that. I think that they go crazy deep. And, you know, if they do a move like CJ Simons and picks or CJ Cove and picks or CJ Cove and Simons, like the depth on that roster, holy crap. It puts you in a situation where it's like, who plays with who? You know, Danny Green probably loses a lot of minutes if that's the case. And I think
we did say offline that we were worried about Danny Green's legs. He just doesn't look. He doesn't look right. He already runs like an idiot, and it's kind of like when you see it and he's not really shooting good from three, you're like, is his legs going to be there after 50 games?
Well, Doc's already saying he's concerned about his hammy, right? So there's already something there with Danny. So maybe he came in unhealthy. You know, we don't know. But, you know, a lot of people have shit on Danny Green, and I've even seen like the casual Sixers Twitter out there be like, why'd we sign Danny Green? We couldn't have got someone else better for $11 million. Well, if you knew the NBA cap, how that worked. We had bird rights on Danny Green. So either it was Danny Green or a minimum level player. I still think Danny Green's better than any minimum guy that you would have got out there, or at least the chance that he works himself into being Danny Green.
Even locker room presence.
Yeah, yeah. And he was good last year. Like Danny Green was hitting, I mean, the three numbers were good for Danny. For some reason, they're nowhere to be found in my brain right now. But his numbers from three last year were on pretty good volume, and they were pretty good. Like he shot one of the, either the most threes on the team or the second most threes on the team. I think it was the most threes on the team, though. So he was really important to our spacing last year. Maybe he's not. Maybe doesn't feel quite as important this year, and maybe the missed threes are louder this year because so many of the guys on the team are hitting threes and are shooting threes, and Seth's shooting at a higher volume. Georges Niang is not afraid to shoot some threes. Furkan, Korkmaz literally translates to fearless. So, like, these are guys that are just chucking threes. Shake Milton is not afraid to shoot. I've loved what I've seen from Shake so far. I'm going to talk myself all the way back in on Shake, just like I did my last preseason. But I think that Danny Green's deficiencies are louder because those guys are playing better and those guys are shooting more threes and those guys are hitting more threes. So the desperation we had for Danny Green's 3-point shooting last year and the spacing he brought to a lineup last year and even some of the defense he brought to a lineup last year doesn't feel as desperate this year. He feels like a guy to me, like when we're down the stretch, that's a guy that's going to be getting 15 to 20 minutes per game. And those could be really important 15 to 20 minutes. Those could
be a great second unit.
100%, 100%. I agree completely. So, you know, I think that we're nearing the end of the Danny Green as a starter experience.
You want to hear the Danny Green numbers?
For sure.
All right. So six attempts last year. So you're exactly right. He was taking a good amount of attempts, hitting about 2.5 of them, shooting 40% from three. This year, he's only shooting about 4 attempts, 4.6. So if you want to round it up to 5, he's shooting 43%, 4.38 from three, but definitely a drop off in threes per game. It could be, you know, the Seth Curry factor. That guy's playing out of his absolute mind right now. I mean, just completely reimagined his own game. Like, you thought he was just a three shooter, a little one dribble to the elbow. That's like he's got to be shooting 100% from the field from that. But now he's going to the basket. Now he's getting crafty. I've never seen this Seth Curry, and I love him.
I cannot even put into words how much I love Seth Curry. Like he is just one of the most like fun I've ever had watching a player on my own team. Cause it's just like, he shoots a three and you're like, that's going in. Like, yeah, it's going in. No doubt about it. I don't even have to think twice about it. It's just like, it's such a rare thing to see a guy shoot in any game. Like there are like two guys in the league. I mean, it's his brother and him that shoot a three. And I am like, it's going in. Don't even have to worry about it. Like I, and the fact that my only complaint about Seth Curry last year was the lack of being unconscious. Like, it seemed like he cared too much about getting the ball to other people, and he cared too much about not shooting too much. And he was kind of like, I think he liked having those like 3-for-4 from three games and keeping his like 3-point. He was like shooting 50% like halfway through the year last year from three. So I think he liked that. I think he liked being careful. And he isn't like a quick trigger, like bang, bang, I get the shot off right away type of guy. He does need a little bit of space, like just the way he shoots. In the same way, like, he's not like Seth in the way that Seth is just like gets to a spot shot, like no matter if someone's in his face or to the right of him, to the left of him. Seth kind of needs a little bit of room for him to get his shot off. So he's done a lot better of a job at getting to those spots this year and getting enough time to get to those spots before a guy closes in on him or closes out on him. So I've loved what I've seen from Seth. And that was like one of the first podcasts I ever did. We did a trade for every team in the league. I asked for them to trade Josh for Seth Curry. Ever since, I've been devoted to Daryl Morey and the muck, the mud, and the barbed wire. So I just love what Seth Curry brings to the team so much.
Here's the thing. We trade for CJ McCollum. Screw defenses up because they look so similar. You think you're guarding CJ, but you're actually guarding Seth. Now there's two guys on Seth. CJ's wide open for three.
Will you be a big-time CJ McCollum podcast listener if he comes to the Sixers?
I mean, I don't consume a lot of content. I know you're a content machine. You know, it's always variable on guests. My podcast is really a lot of guests. There's not many people that can go, you know, just themselves that can really carry a whole podcast. So, I'll listen to a couple. Yeah. I mean, cause I'll take clips and bits for social media and throw them out there and get the likes and retweets and everything.
Big wine guy, CJ McCollum, huge wine guy.
NBA is a big wine league.
Sheesh.
Yeah. LeBron James just bringing it onto the bench one time, which is still
that was wild.
Anyone else does that, that's like a suspension or at least a fine. But you know, LeBron's allowed to get drunk on the bench. Anything else you got? What did you think of the We Want Lillard chance?
Oh, I love it. How could you not love it? I wanted to go on Monday. Oh, no, not at all. People that are like, oh, you should be embarrassed rooting for the other team. It's like, oh, well, we beat them by 10 without four of our starters. So any embarrassment that we would have felt like if Lillard would have dropped 40 and hit like a game winner obviously didn't come. So I was more than happy with it. And I thought it painted us in a good light for like once of all times. Like, it went on PTI and they were joking. I never watched PTI. Bizarre content for me to reference there. But I was for some reason watching PTI and they were like, you don't see the Sixers, you know, or the Philly fans give the other team some respect. So good for them. And I was like, what?
I mean, when we're good, we get mad at ourselves, and when we're mean, we get mad at ourselves. There's no win-win. I mean, what do you want us to do? Spit on them like what's Cliff Lee at Yankee Stadium? Like, you want to be like Cliff Lee, like came here because his wife got like spit on and shouted obscenities at like all during the playoffs that one year, and was like, yeah, we were considering New York until that happened.
Yeah, Cliff Lee's wife getting spit on cost Cliff Lee like $30 million.
Yeah. Hey, you gotta have principles in life, all right? It's not all about the paycheck.
If a man, if you stand for nothing, a man falls for anything. That's a quote from someone important.
If he says he has 10 toes in Portland, congratulations. But like, he's gonna think about it. Like, hey, you know, I remember those Philly fans on that cold Monday in November.
You want to hear
nice to me?
You want to hear my boomer take about the situation? Yeah. My boomer take would be, if Lillard's not, I'm gonna do my boomer voice. If Lillard's not embarrassed, I don't even want him on the Sixers.
Yeah, that was the Bradley Beal take last year. It was like, Bradley Beal, perennial loser. Why would I want him on the Sixers?
By the way, I kind of feel that way about Bradley Beal. I kind of do think he's a loser.
The boomer takes, they switch from player to player. De'Aaron Fox, not a winner.
De'Aaron Fox, I think he's a tough guy. I think he cares a lot. I don't think he's a winner. It's kind of
John
weird.
Stockton, not a winner. Karl Malone, not a winner.
John Stockton, dirty player. Karl Malone, predator.
A lot of baggage in Karl Malone.
Predator.
Lot of baggage.
I think he has like a 13-year-old baby mama at some point of his career.
The baby was an eagle, I'm pretty sure.
What?
Yeah, one of the eagles used to be Karl Malone's kid.
I missed that. Karl Malone wrestled Hulk Hogan.
He did.
WCW.
Karl Malone, great body. Strong.
Oh, yeah. Dennis Rodman. Karl Malone and Hulk Hogan versus Dennis Rodman and Diamond Dallas Page. Legendary stuff right there. Karl Malone looked like a freak in wrestling attire.
Yeah, I feel like you didn't know how big Karl Malone was until he was shirtless in tights fighting Hulk Hogan. Yeah.
How did you say Hulk Hogan there?
I was like Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, you sounded like how like the Iron Sheik used to say.
Yeah, sounded like I was reading Hulk out of Hogan. Sounded like I was reading out of the Torah. Hulk Hogan.
A lot of, if I did that right now, it'd just be the mic would be covered in phlegm. A phlegmy mess.
Alright, let's move over to the birds. Go birds. So when it was all said and done, the Eagles, I guess, were technically sellers at the deadline. Two trades to one trade, two players out, one player in. So I guess we did kind of sell. I guess how we did kind of sell. But if you followed along, and I'm sure you did, yeah, they weren't able to move Andre Dillard. Reports were saying the Birds wanted a day two pick for him. They aggressively tried to move Fletcher Cox, according to Jeff McLean. The Eagles wanted a second or third rounder for him, and nobody would budge. I really just look at it as an all-around bad day for Howie Roseman, and I defend a lot of guys. Howie Roseman actually had a really good offseason, and you know it's kind of hard to really defend him because of his career resume, but I was actually kind of, you know, getting a little positive on the Howie Roseman train until recently, and we started sucking again. I just don't understand a couple of things. Andre Dillard, nowhere close to starting. They just extended Jordan Mailata. Lane's locked up here till 2023. Unless someone gets hurt, this is kind of the highest ceiling he has at the moment. So I know you wanted a day two pick, but could you not, you know, maybe settle for a fifth rounder,
but
sixth rounder? I mean,
I'm of the opinion that nothing after the fifth round really matters, and that if you ever want a pick in the sixth or the seventh round, you can go get one. Like that's kind of, in my opinion, like you could trade a sixth from the next year for a seventh every single year, and it would never affect you before you were fired or before you were out of a job. Like, I just think you could continue getting rid of old picks for old picks in 1 year or another year. I think the whole trading a player for like a fifth or a sixth round pick is like mostly usually to like clear the way for someone else. I kind of feel
Tom Brady factor.
It's kind of like Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz a little bit. Like I feel like when you trade Zach Ertz for like what did we get, a fourth or a fifth?
I totally forget.
It's a fourth or a fifth. We got a fourth or a fifth for Ertz. And I feel like that wouldn't have happened. That trade wouldn't have happened if we didn't want Dallas Goedert to take a step. And if we didn't, if there wasn't someone to clear the way for. Like, so when you look at Andre Dillard, it's like he's under contract in the offseason. So they could still technically move Dillard in the offseason. And is it more worth trading him now for a fifth round pick? And you know, maybe then someone gets hurt and then we're really screwed for the rest of the year and important players in the Eagles could get hurt, like whatever you want to say. But you could also say that we'll probably get a sixth round pick in the offseason if we really want one for Dillard. So it's like they probably would have gotten a fifth yesterday. Maybe they'll get a sixth in the offseason instead. I just think that most of the late day stuff kind of means nothing. So the only person I was really interested in them moving was Cox, because it felt like he could get them something important, something in, on that day too, probably. I was even thinking maybe like a second and a fourth, or like a third and a fourth, or whatever that would be for Cox. But you definitely can't trade Cox for a day three pick. And I don't even think you can trade Cox for just a third.
Well, here's the thing though, like for a second and a third is what they wanted. And that's probably what Fletcher Cox deserved. Like you said, a second or third. But it's also like they wanted a second or third partly, and we don't know if they wanted, you know, 2 seconds, 1 second, one third, one pick for him. But I'm going to assume that they probably wanted two picks for him. And maybe the assumption's wrong, but the worst part about it is, why would they restructure Fletcher Cox's contract if there was even a 1% chance of him potentially being shopped at the trade deadline? Well, now instead, they so really, I looked into this. So Fletcher Cox's deal, if they would have never restructured him, it would have been a hit of $21 million, but it would have been spread over 2 years, and it would have freed up, in the end, $32 million over those next two seasons. Instead, since they restructured him, the cap hit became $37 million if he was traded, and now the Eagles can essentially move on from him until about 2023. To go even further, if they would have traded Dillard and cut Brandon Brooks after June 1st, it would have freed up $45 million, which is also on top of what they could have got for Cox, which would, I think it would have been 15 1 year and then 60 in the next year. So they would have been playing around with like $60 million going into the next season. And plus, I think they have $22 million under the cap, plus whatever the cap goes up and whatnot for next year that rolls over. I mean, Howie's brand is the contract guy. Mm-hmm. That's his brand. It's not a player evaluator. He's the contract and cap guy. And he totally just like shit all over his brand. And I sometimes wonder if Howie cares about the Eagles or just cares about what he looks like to the organization, how to protect himself. Because if he moves on for Andre Dillard, that's an admission of a bad pick. If he moves on from Brandon Brooks, if he moves on from Fletcher Cox, those are a couple guys off of the 2018 Super Bowl team that still holds weight around here. The only Super Bowl winner in franchise history. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Howie's contract guy, and you just laid out that better than I could, talking about the Cox cap hits. But, I mean, you don't have to go. He gave a kicker an ironclad contract.
That was a nice contract.
No, but not only like nice financially, like it's like if you look into it, and I don't know. I'm not as well-versed in contracts.
I think it was $21 million guaranteed.
But even beyond that, they made it like really hard to like ever cut him. Like if you look into the stats and like the dead cap and stuff like that, like they made it really hard to ever move on from Jake Elliott. And like, you know, by the fourth year of that, it'll get restructured for three more years for a kicker. And it's like, oh my God, like how is Howie sitting around? It's like, we're fucked if we don't pay Jake Elliott. Like, yeah. I don't know what we're going to do. Like
most important position in sports, the kicker. I mean, we make fun of Jerry Jones for giving a Zeke $90 million. We give a kicker $21 million guaranteed. Like, a kicker.
Have you ever heard my proposal for getting rid of kickers? Have I ever given that on this?
No, but I'd be for it.
Instead of field goals and instead of, like, a PAT. Well, a field goal you can do from wherever you're standing on the field. But a PAT, instead of a PAT, you bring in a quarterback who has to throw it, like, 70 yards through the uprights. That's my fix. Yeah, and then every team has to like draft and bring in these like huge armed quarterbacks. And then
DeMarcus Russell would still have a job. Oh,
Jeff George would be coming back. Like it would be incredible.
So if you back these guys up, like can you do it from like
the other 30? Like it has to be
the other 30
or like the other 40.
Is it a 2-pointer if you go from the other 20? Is it like keep getting more like the 4-point shot in basketball they've tried to propose?
I could be talked into that. I could 100% be talked into that. And imagine like you get a false start. He steps over the line on the throw and you have to back it up 10 yards.
Can imagine DeMarcus Russell coming in. Raiders are down 21-20 and they're on their own 30. And DeMarcus Russell comes in for a field goal and the field goal is him throwing it through the uprights from the 30. That'd be amazing. That'd be like an 87 yarder.
But it'd be interesting. It's like Buffalo. Like Josh Allen's got maybe the biggest arm in the league, but you know, it's like punt returning, kick returning. Do we want to use Josh Allen's arm on those PATs? Like we might need to save that. He might throw his arm out. So maybe like then you have to sign Michael Vick off.
Definitely a backup, definitely a backup's job. Like 100%. There's more than just holding the clipboard anymore. And that'd be awesome because how could we make it still fun for the defense? Maybe you have to be down on linemen, an offensive lineman.
What do you mean?
Like, because I want to see some defenses like kick the shit out of the backup.
Oh, I was saying like this is a free throw was in my head. Like no one on the field except for the quarterback.
No, I think we need to add.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it's just like a regular play and he has to throw it all the way through there. But the way I had it in my head was just like, all right, comes like we're taking a field goal. We're at the 50. Just come in. You take it. You just throw it and you can't step over the line. You can't step over like the yard marker.
Oh my God.
This has been like my dream for like a decade. I've wanted like to have it in like a video game or like something I've been pitching this for so long.
Myles Garrett coming off the end, clobbers the backup as he launches it. Justin Tucker kind of like double doink kind of field goal. Oh, that would be amazing. When's the last time they played like a top 10 of like a kicker highlight? That would be on top 10 all the time. I can't believe I just referenced top 10 like I'm a fucking boomer.
The most like relevant kicker highlight of all time is like Martin Gramatica tearing his ACL through, like celebrating a kick. Or was it Fat Randy Bullock who missed the field goal but celebrated like he hit it?
Yeah. The guy who used to kick for the Bears and then he kicked for the 49ers. Oh, fuck. What was his name?
Jeff? Sorry, the yeah. J?
Yeah. There was a windy Chicago day, and he kicked it, and it goes like 30 yards to the right. It was just hilarious. It had no shot.
Vanderjagt missing like three kickers in the one game, and then Peyton coming out after the game and saying, yeah, well, we'd still be playing, but our drunk idiot kicker missed three kicks.
Are wild. Janikowski, Matt Prater, Vanderjagt, they're all drunks. It's awesome.
It's the Grammaticas, the Automatica Grammatica. I mean, that's just
like Aguayo's brother, like tearing apart a turtle. Yeah. They're all just fucked in the head.
David Akers might be like the coolest dude ever. That speech he gave at the draft, I'm a big David Akers guy. He might be like the most well-adjusted kicker of all time.
True. Morten Andersen seems to be like a pretty cool guy. That guy, Tom Dempsey, he had no foot. He was still booming balls.
McAfee was a kicker in college, but not a kicker. I'm pretty sure he got like death threats for missing a big kick during the Pat White era.
He would have gone to the national championship, but he missed that kick.
I didn't know that. Yeah. But Pat White, Steve Slayton, Noel Devine, West Virginia years are like my prime of following college football and playing the video game. Like those teams and the Jeremiah Masoli, Marcus Mariota, Oregon teams were like the greatest college football video game.
Owen Schmidt. He would just throw his helmet against his head and bleed. Yeah.
Tavon would have been a little later, but I think there was a receiver in there in that period too. Tavon would have been later, but there was definitely like a sick receiver too. I can't remember who it was.
What else you got on the Eagles?
Oh, Goddard. I mean, Goddard. All I really had. It's really like a fantasy point more than anything. So I was arguing with someone based on like who the top five tight ends in the league are for the rest of the way for fantasy. And I think I would argue Goddard will – I would say there's only four tight ends for fantasy I'd rather have than Goddard the rest of the way, which might sound crazy because right now he's the number 12 tight end in ESPN. But this is a Goddard / Eagles take here. You look at the last two games. Without Zach Ertz, he has had 12 and 14 fantasy points. The first game, he had 3 catches on 70 yards with 5 targets. This week, he had 6 catches on 70 yards with 7 or 6 catches on 7 targets with 72 yards.
Jalen only had 9 completions.
That's the point. So he had No. You read it perfectly. That was my next point. 6 of the 9 completions were to Goddard. 7 of the 14 potential targets went to Goddard. So there's been a lot of numbers I've seen over the last 2 weeks that it's been like Hurts throws the ball 30% to the left, and then it breaks it down like 15 yards, below 15 yards, past it, whatever. He throws it 7 to 10% in the middle, and then he throws it like 60 to 63% on the right side. Last week was way more to the middle of the field. And obviously it's Detroit. Who knows how much of it's relevant and how much of it will be used in game plans going forward. But it seemed like their number one game plan on offense when they were throwing the ball was to get the ball to Dallas Goedert, which really jives a lot with what Sirianni was saying when they traded Ertz in that press conference. I think I even came on here after and talked about it, and I was like, yeah, Sirianni seems like he loves Goedert and seems like they're going to try to get him the ball. And you look at those last 2 weeks, that's 12 and 13. If he were to average 12.6 points per game for tight ends, and that's with no growth, that's with no improvement for the rest of the year, and that's without scoring either of those last 2 weeks. If he were to average 12.6, he'd be like the number 6 tight end already this year on average. So he also had the 2 weeks before that, he had 17 and 5. So I think Goddard's going to be a top 5 fantasy tight end the rest of the way. And I think he's going to be maybe even a bigger part of the offense than Devonta Smith. It seems like they're kind of going to Goddard and focusing on Goddard and zeroing in on him as part of their game plan more than they are with Smith. So I think Goddard has a huge, huge second half. And I think Smith might, you know, I was really optimistic about Smith and really optimistic about his impact this year. I thought he'd be the clear, unquestioned number one guy in the offense. I don't know anymore.
Do you think this is just a season-long tryout for Dallas Goedert? Because it feels like it is. I mean, they either tag him next year or they give him a contract. And I think they're going to probably give him a nice little contract.
I think
unless
so,
Tyree
too.
Jackson is, like, amazing in the last, like, 9 games of the season.
I think so too. And Mike Kay was talking about that. He said, you know, we're looking at it. Is it a Sirianni year? Is it Hurts year? It might be about no one more than Dallas Goedert. And I think that that's true. And when you talk about what Dallas Goddard's contract is going to look like, I did this on a different, a way nerdier show than this. You look at the top ranked contracts. He's not getting Kittle money. He's not getting Kelsey money. And Mark Andrews actually got Kelsey money, which is kind of bizarre. So then you look at the next two, and it's Jonnu Smith, it's Hunter Henry. That's 4 years, $50 million. It's 3 years, $37 million. that still feels like a little much to me for what Goddard has done so far and what he's proven so far. So where I'm going to look is right around what Logan Thomas signed this year. Logan Thomas has not played much this year for Washington, but he had two really good years going into this year as a tight end. He got a three-year, $24 million contract. I think Goddard's a little bit more like 3 years, 30, maybe 4 years, 40. I think it'll be closer to that $10 million than $8 million. But it'll be closer to $8 million than $12 million probably. So I think it'll be right in that range. And that's a pretty good – that would put him, you know, right in that top 10 in terms of being paid as a tight end. And Kyle Pitts is already ninth, which is funny because he was the fourth pick. But
I would agree he's a top 10 tight end.
I think he's top eight.
Oh. Do rank him.
I will right now. Not rank, but just like who's better than him. Obviously, Kelce, Kittle – Andrews, I would say Pitts and Waller. And then after that, I mean, Hockenson's a good blocker. Yeah, I don't even know if I think it, but I'll give it to Hockenson. So that puts it at six. You know, I think that's about it. Like, I think he's better than Johnny Smith. He's better than Ertz at this point. He's better than Hooper. He's better than
Evan Ingram.
Yeah, he's better than Evan Ingram. I like Higbee, but he's better than Higbee.
What about Dalton Schultz?
I like Dalton Schultz, I think Goddard's better. I think if Goddard was on the Cowboys, I think it would be like, oh my God, I like Dallas Goddard. I think he'd be doing even better than Schultz. I think he's more athletic, but I think he's probably the seventh best tight end. You can make an argument, I'm sure, for Higbee or Schultz or maybe Noah Fant, but I'm not as big of a Noah Fant guy as everyone else. I don't think he's that good.
Where else are you going to find
Noah Fant content?
Ranking eight tight ends. You're not going to find that anywhere else. What do you know about pole assassins?
We're going to have a lot of pole talk in this next however long. You got pole assassin. You got the college football pole. I mean, a lot of pole talk. I know.
Have you ever seen someone assassinate a pole before?
No, I have not.
Not a big strip club guy.
I've never been to a strip club.
Not a big strip club podcast. Nah, like two.
Yeah, it makes me feel weird. Icky.
Cooties.
But yeah, I've heard they have good buffets there though. Yeah, I'm a big buffet guy.
People are lying to you.
Not really.
Steak and titties at Delilah's. That's probably the only one, maybe. I don't know.
I know everything there is to know about the pole assassin. I've done my Twitter sleuthing. I've done my deep dive.
So
if you want to tell the people.
For people who don't know, because obviously we're not a big college football podcast, we're not a big college football country up here in Philadelphia, the craziest story of college football for the season, and there's been many, involves a Texas special teams coach named Jeff Banks and his mistress, former stripper, that is called the pole assassin, and her pet monkey biting a child on Halloween so badly that the monkey's jaws had to be pried off the child's arm. Now, this was just a random tweet from an unverified source, but has been kind of confirmed through circles close to Texas and whatnot. Like, the guy just tweeted this out. He's like a Texas, former Texas photographer, I think, for the football team or for the athletic team or the athletic program. Now, how did she get her name, the pole assassin? Well, Jerry Springer, of course. She was on Jerry Springer like 5-10 years ago. And I guess maybe she was like, get the crowd going for the start of it or whatnot. I don't know. I mean, I missed that episode of Springer when I was homesick from school. But the backstory on the pole assassin and Jeff Banks is they're hosting a haunted house. Jeff Banks left his wife and four kids for the pole assassin. Now, this is a guy who used to work under Nick Saban, and I'm pretty sure he found her in either Alabama or on some road trip. He walked into a strip club, saw the pole assassin performing with her monkey, and said, I have to have that pole assassin. No one else can have that pole assassin. I need to have the assassin of poles around me 24/7, 365. So he gets hired under Sarkisian's.
He's the special teams coordinator. He makes $1 million. He's one of the highest paid special teams coordinators in the country, if not the
Mark,
highest.
He was getting looks at by Wazoo for the next head coaching gig. Like, this is a legit coach.
You know how funny it would be for Wazoo to go from having a coach who had to quit because he wouldn't get vaccinated to getting a coach who left his wife and kids for the pole assassin, who also has a pet monkey who bit someone while on a haunted house he created at his own residence?
I kind of agree with the pole assassin, and I'll tell you why.
Oh, so she This might be a little bit of a witch hunt at the pole assassin.
Yeah, a strip hunt. Here is the pole assassin clearing her name in a video detailing how far these kids had to go to get back to her emotional support monkey, who she used to have on stage with her. We don't know if it's the on stage monkey. It's the emotional support monkey. She used to have a monkey called Gia, who came on stage with her and would do tricks and hand her dollar bills while she was on the pole. So I'm going to share this video with you from the pole assassin. This was a deleted video because she deleted her old Twitter and everything. But this was the pole assassin detailing how far this kid had to go back to get to the emotional support monkey.
This is sad that people have to go all out of the way to prove that a person is lying. Here's the gate. Here's where all the haunted house action happened. And yes, I do clean up fast. The shit's gone. Here's the gate that every child and parent was told to turn around at when they got to. It was closed and blocked off with balloons. This is how far the kid went in my backyard without permission, all the way over here to where my animals live. And watch this.
It's a great pool.
Great pool.
That's jacuzzi.
I don't even play when it comes to my animals, and I know all the legal rules on them. Do not enter emotional support animal. No touching.
Okay, I think we should have to go back to the do not enter. This looks like a sign that would be in a haunted house.
Yeah, it does.
I'm going to need more of a real sign. Like, you know how, like, beware of dog? Like, beware of emotional support animal? I don't need, like, some Crayola drawing or a it looks like she just took a marker to a piece of paper and hung it up before she got before she turned the video on.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, what is the likelihood that that paper was there when the monkey attacked?
A support animal, no touching. How can she viciously bite someone if they don't stick their hand in there where it don't belong?
Where's this the monkey?
Her home, and
I think right around here there are eyeballs. It looks like there's like four or five of them.
Oh, okay.
They look like puppies, but they also might be monkeys. Did the monkey get harambe'd? We don't know yet.
Her home only. Oh, okay. It's already clear to stay on the gate. Don't touch. No one's allowed back here.
That's an awesome monkey cage, by the way. That monkey is living lavishly.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Banks makes $1 million to be the special teams coordinator.
That was a great It was a great
Is he getting fired?
Is he fired? I think this is a perfect distraction that Steve Sarkisian needs. They're 4-4 right now.
How drunk is Steve Sarkisian right now after hearing this?
You think he charged $400 of tequila shots to the program?
Is that what happened? Did he do that at USC?
He's a huge, huge tequila guy. Loves tequila.
I knew that he was like using his company card, right? Or like whatever that is, like to buy drinks and stuff. But I didn't know, like, you know, what his drink choice was.
Do you think Jalen Hurts has ever met the pole assassin?
No, he's too pure. I'll tell
Mac Jones always met the pole assassin. Mac Jones probably goes to pole assassin Tuesdays back when he was in Tuscaloosa.
That's where he was coming back from when he got the DUI.
Yeah. He did get a DUI. I like Jalen Hurts. I think he's a great dude, but he kind of strikes me as a preacher. He's got that preacher kind of vibe to him and whatnot. I don't know if you ever watched many reality TV shows or you follow along on the preacher webs of the internet. I don't think you're in many preacher circles.
Confirmed not in preacher circles.
Confirmed not preaching the gospel, nor having the Lord bestowed upon me every Sunday. Preachers ain't the best people. Preachers are big cheaters, at least the famous ones. The ones who get all the clout, the ones who get all the money, the ones who get all the donations for the church that they funnel into their bank accounts.
Are you trying to tell me that the Catholic Church and other churches of the like have had issues in the past? Because
I am. The Catholic Church, the Baptist Church, whatever these preachers are, I don't know what they are. They all have churches somehow. I don't know how, but they're not the greatest of people. They drive in like Bentleys and they just like bang checks. They bang parishioners. Like they all get caught up in a cheating scandal, whether you're an Instagram preacher, which is like a new thing, and you grow your following over there, whether you do it the old school way, like that one guy down in Houston, Texas. I forget what he's got a huge church. some white guy, Joel Osborne. There you go. Joel Osborne, whether you're him.
Osman.
Sorry. And you just you grow your following the old school way. Yeah, preachers aren't the greatest of people. So I don't know. I can see Jalen Hurts a little dabbling in some strip clubs and whatnot. Brian Dawkins supposedly was a nut at strip clubs.
Tim Tebow. Has Tim Tebow been to a strip club?
Only to give communion. Unless there was a toy drive at a strip club. Tim Tebow is one of the only guys that I actually do believe has not been to a strip club and feels like he would be smited if he stepped 1 foot inside of there.
Here's the question. When Tim Tebow got drafted to the NFL, that day stepping on the stage, was he a virgin? Do you believe it or no?
I struggle to believe that Tim Tebow didn't at least have oral sex.
Does that count as being a virgin or no? I think so. I think it does.
In my mind, it does.
Yeah, me too.
In other people's minds, I don't think it does.
He definitely had one of those, like, you know, if it's your mouth, the Lord doesn't know rules, like in his head, like, you know, we're able to kind of hide that, like, you know.
Tim Tebow had anal and doesn't think it's sex.
Yeah.
Tim Tebow's great at coming from behind.
He is. You'll never see anyone work quite as hard as I work for the rest of this season. Yes, we don't know what he was talking about.
Speaking of pole assassins, the college football playoff rankings were announced yesterday, and it was absolutely ridiculous if you are a fan of the Power Six. If you didn't see it, actually, my buddy sent me a picture because I was out, and it was the top four teams, and I thought it was a joke. That's how bad it was. So it's Georgia, Bama, Michigan State, Oregon. Multiple whiffs. Cincy probably definitely being the craziest. Oklahoma being ranked eighth, even though they almost lost to Kansas and they've only won a couple games by one touchdown. It's pretty preposterous when they're 9-0. Houston and SMU, both at 7-1, are unranked. When you put in, like, I think Tulsa or Fresno State or San Diego State, other mid-majors that don't belong, that aren't even a part of the Power Six, are in there. I mean, they created the playoff to respect the group of five and respect the group of five schools, and they said they would get more respect, and then they had the opportunity to give them respect, and this is what they do. It's all sham.
Yeah, it's complete bullshit. I hate – there's, like, so many things that you could complain about on this ranking. It's, like, hard to even break it down into what you're angriest about. Like, I don't even know where to really start, but
– what are you angriest about?
I mean, Oklahoma and Cincinnati are definitely, like, the two that are like, what are we doing here? If being undefeated just doesn't matter. Like, it just means nothing. I would say Alabama being two is problematic because that means that's setting up for a situation where Alabama loses a second game to Georgia in the SEC championship and gets the four spot. I think that is 100% going to happen now. I think Georgia is better than Alabama.
Very good at covering their asses.
Yeah, ranking Mississippi State 17.
And that's why they put Bama at two, so that if Bama loses, like you said, in the SEC championship game, they'll then move to four.
And play Georgia again.
I have a hard time believing that Bama's not a top four team. That's the only thing.
But that doesn't matter. A top four team should have beaten Texas A&M then. Who they only ranked 14. Like, it's not like they were like, oh, A&M is better than their record and we're going to put them in the top 10. No, you ranked them 14 and they're better than any win that Alabama has. Alabama's best win is Ole Miss or Mississippi State, who are ranked behind Texas A&M, who they lost to. So at some point, winning and losing has to matter. I know that it's like we have to get the four best teams. That's not really the criteria. The criteria doesn't say, like, we're going to get the four best teams in the country. It's the most deserving. And Alabama doesn't have those wins. They just don't at this point. Honestly, they don't have the path to get to those wins without beating Georgia. So if this team gets in as a two-loss SEC non-champion, a runner-up, and I know Herb Street and Reese Davis emphasized last night on the show that they do not think that'll happen. I'm not as sure. I am nowhere near as sure that Alabama won't get in as a two-loss thing. So that's probably the thing that makes me maddest, because I still do think Oklahoma, if they win out, they're going to have to respect Oklahoma because they have Oklahoma State and Baylor at 11-12. So the two things, Oklahoma, whatever, that's them saying they haven't played anyone. They still have people on the schedule. You can't get too upset about that because the College Football Playoff Committee has shown that they will change things like that, like with not really any rhyme or reason. So they will change things with a couple Oklahoma wins. Cincinnati and Alabama are the two dominoes that are hard for me to understand, because it's like Alabama, like I just said, should not make it if they're a two-loss team. This is setting them up for that. And Cincinnati should not have to prove anything more than they've already proven to deserve to be in the top four, which is being undefeated, and they're going to beat Houston and SMU. And you know, like you said, they're good at covering their tracks. You know Houston was in that top 25. There's no way that Houston wasn't in that top 25, and they decided – well, you know, let's not give Cincinnati a top 25 win in a couple weeks when they beat Houston. So let's keep them out of the top 25. Let's, you know, put in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa.
Wisconsin. Ugh.
So
that Wisconsin one pissed me off.
Do you know who the committee chair is? They interviewed him. It's after. Barton. Do you know who the is the AD for?
Who?
Iowa. Iowa. Yeah. Iowa.
He does have to recuse himself too, though, I think.
About Iowa, sure. But not about the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And the Big Ten got fellatioed yesterday. I mean, Michigan State at 3, whatever. It's going to work itself out. They're going to win at least lose two games, in my opinion. Like, I don't think Michigan State's very good. Yeah. But to put Michigan at 7 is so unbelievable. Michigan has not beaten anyone. Their best win's Nebraska.
Yeah. Yeah, them at 7, not even moving, is ridiculous. I got more for it. The head of committee, Barta, he just came out and just totally railed against Cincy, and it was all just so hypocritical. He used Cincy playing Tulsa's freshman QB against them, but forgot about Bama losing to a backup quarterback. You can't compare Oregon's schedule and say it doesn't stack up to Cincinnati. Cincy beat Indiana by more points than Michigan State did. They have a top 10 win over Notre Dame in South Bend, which I think you're mostly mad about, is because now that's a bad loss. It's a bad loss for Notre Dame. How is Notre Dame top 10 if since he's a 6? It's a bad loss. Well,
Notre Dame shouldn't be 10. They should be 7 or 8. So it's honestly – and that they did that, by the way. Notre Dame would have been 8. They're 8 in the AP top 25. They would have been number 8. Well, maybe not, because Oklahoma is so much lower on the college football playoff, which makes no sense, and Michigan's 7, which makes no sense. But – they did that so that they could defend their Cincinnati ranking. If they ranked Notre Dame at 8 and then ranked Notre Dame or ranked Cincinnati at 6, they'd be like, how do you defend that? How do you say, like, this win over number 8 on the road? I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, for people to act like Michigan with one loss, with their two best wins being Wisconsin and Nebraska, while Notre Dame has one loss, also beat the shit out of Wisconsin, who they ranked in the top 25, beat them by 38. So, like, whatever you want to say about ugly all game. That, huh?
That was an ugly game.
They won. Well, I don't think they beat them by 30. I think they scored 38-13.
They did. Yeah, they beat them by 25, and you would have. And if you watched like the first three quarters, you'd have been like, "How the hell did they end up beating them by 25?"
Yeah, the fourth was insane. It was crazy. But I, you know, I just don't understand the hoops that this committee jumps through mentally to disrespect certain teams. And I've been, you know, they haven't disrespected Notre Dame in the past. They've been pretty fair to Notre Dame, I think, and that's been a criticism of them that a lot of people have levied. By the way, it's never been a fair criticism, because they've never overrated Notre Dame one time singularly ever. You know.
Show up in the playoff.
So tell that to Oklahoma. But I think that – tell it to Michigan State too, by the way. Michigan State was only there once. They lost by 50, and now they're number 3 again. So
probably lump in Washington there too.
Huh?
Washington, oh, yeah, every time they show
up. Holy shit. They only went once. Washington, it's crazy that they went though. Holy shit. Chris Peterson. Wow. I love Chris Peterson. But anyway, Notre Dame should be ranked 8th. Doesn't really matter. There's no college football playoff path for them, really. I was kind of yesterday before the ranking, I was kind of like, you know, I did the ESPN stuff. ESPN actually had before the ranking, they had Notre Dame as the 7th most likely team to make the playoffs at 17%. And they said if they went out and go 11-1, which they'll be heavily favored to do in the next 4 games, they had a 47% chance to make the playoffs. And I was like, you should fire whoever your analytic department is that said that Notre Dame has a 47% chance to make the playoffs at 11-1, because it's not going to happen. But they would need like Oregon to lose. They would need the Big 10 to kill each other. They would need, you know, probably Oklahoma to win out, Cincinnati to win out, Georgia to beat Bama, and then mayhem in the everywhere else. Like, there's no path. They're going to play Michigan on a New Year's Six Bowl.
Here's how you get the mid-major conferences off your back. Just put Cincy in.
Exactly.
If they go undefeated and they get steamrolled by somebody, that's your, you could point to that forever. You could say, hey, listen, Cincinnati played a weak schedule. 2021, remember that? Remember they got steamrolled by Bama or steamrolled by Georgia, 55-0? Yeah, you're never getting in here ever again. I mean, you look back at it like that, the Boise State years, when they beat Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl, one of the greatest games of all time. It would have been awesome to see Boise State get in the national championship game. If they would have got run on, we would have never had this problem. This would always have been the armor that they could have had. UCF, the national championship, the national champions back in, I think, 18, 17, they beat number 7 Auburn in the Peach Bowl. Crushed them. Wasn't even the game.
Cincinnati competed with Georgia last year.
Cincinnati, same exact team from last year. You're exactly right. Took Georgia to the end. We're winning most of the time, too. It's just, yeah, it's a sham. And I love to see Cincinnati get in because there you go. You can fix it. If they get steamrolled,
they won't.
Fine.
They won't, by the way.
Sauce. They won't. Sauce Gardner.
They won't get in, but if they were to get in, they won't get steamrolled. They're a good football team. Luke Fickell is a good football coach, and Desmond Ridder is a top 10 quarterback in the country. So, you know, I know that they've struggled with Navy. They've struggled with whoever, Tulane.
Tulsa for a little bit, or Tulane, whoever it was.
It's Tulane. I always get those mixed up in my head, too. They're playing Tulsa this week. And, oh, yeah, ESPN is going to Cincinnati this week for College Game Day to a game that now means nothing. It means nothing. Nothing Cincinnati does for the rest of the year is going to matter. They could win every game by 50. It won't matter. They're done. Cincinnati is not making the playoff. No matter what happens, they will twist things around to make sure Cincinnati doesn't make it. I'm infuriated, honestly. Like, I just don't understand what Cincinnati could ever do. They scheduled Indiana. They scheduled Notre Dame. They scheduled someone else that didn't end up being as good as they thought they'd be. I'm blanking on that right now. But I don't know what they're supposed to do. I don't know what a group of five team is supposed to do. It's not their fault that Indiana didn't end up being what they were supposed to be. And Notre Dame is better than anyone could have expected this season. No one thought Notre Dame was going to win 9 games or 10 games. I think their over-under was 8.5. They're going to be 11-1. So that Cincinnati win looks better than anyone ever expected it to, especially when they lost the game. It was like, oh, well, Notre Dame's got some tough opponents coming up, so they're going to lose some of them. They didn't. They beat Wisconsin. They beat USC. They beat North Carolina. They beat all these teams that are in Power 5 schools that other Power 5 schools are getting credit for beating. So Cincinnati, by proxy, should get credit for beating the team that beat those teams. It's such a college football. I love this. Like, this is what I love about college football, that I do kind of wish the NFL was like, no, that win was bullshit. Like, it is kind of fun. Like, it's being so semantic and arguing about it. There's a lot of fun behind it, but times like this just make it be like, it. Think about how crazy it would be if the NBA, like, you played the NBA season and then, like, Adam Silver was like, well, we've decided that the computer has said that the Nets and the Lakers are the two best teams, so that's actually how we're, like, going to decide this year. It's just, like, kind of funny to, like, think about what would happen if professional sports were run like the BCS and the college football playoff. It's pretty funny.
Like, Sean Marks is the head of the NBA playoff committee. He's like, yeah, you know, we're gonna decide that Nets Lakers for the finals. We're not even gonna play the first 3 rounds. Yeah. Hey, also, to prove the Cincinnati point, they beat a Temple team that was technically back by 50. That should be on the resume.
They were back. You did.
They were back for a week. You have to go in and play a Temple team that was back for 1 week. Fire Rod Carey. All right. Well, that's the podcast. Rate, review, subscribe, follow on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. All that stuff, wherever you get your podcast. We will talk to you on Friday. We have a NFL writer coming on, and we'll discuss Eagles versus Chargers. Talk to you then. Bye.